What's up and welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Monday, May 15th, 2023. Of course, I am Tim Geddes, and I'm joined by the new face of video games, Blessing Adeoye Jr.
Tim, I was very convinced that work could have gotten canceled today.
Yeah.
This is Zelda.
Every day, from now on. You know what I mean?
Let's just take a week off.
I feel like there's enough in this game to be able to play it forever.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
The fact that this weekend, I was like, this is my first weekend free. I don't have to play Zelda. I can do whatever I want. And I just played Zelda.
Yeah.
It just keeps going.
I was playing and I kept seeing Blessing popping up multiple times.
I was
playing so long in one sitting that you started and stopped multiple times.
Hell yeah,
in that same day.
How much have you played over the weekend?
Not as much as I wish that I could have, because this is such a phenomenal game. But I made some good progress. I want to say I'm maybe like 12 hours in, something like that. But oh my God,
first impressions?
Love it. Love this game. We're going to do a whole games cast later this week about everyone else's first kind of couple days impressions of this absolute masterpiece of a video game.
Yeah.
What an experience this is, man. To not only be able to finally get my hands on it myself, but to be on Twitter, see everybody playing it. Every time I load up my Switch, literally everyone, except for me sometimes playing Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, everyone is playing Tears of the Kingdom. It's just like, it's a special cool moment that I missed out on last year with Elden Ring. You know? And it's rare that we get these big moments, like Elden Ring being one of them. But before that, it's like, I don't know what it was.
Animal Crossing,
which is another one I missed out on. So it's like there's the moments like God of Wars and things like that. But I feel like that's more of like the weekend, one experience that we're all. It's like more like watching a movie, right?
Yeah.
Whereas this kind of feels like watching a season of a TV show.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said about one, how big and gigantic the game is, and you can play this game for weeks and weeks and still get so much out of it. But then also the amount of creativity you can put into it. I think that's the thing that you're missing out when it comes to something like a God of War, where it comes out, we're so hyped for it, we play it for the weekend, you see the Twitter talking about it, TikToks, all that stuff, and then eventually you see it fade and then go into the next thing, because that's what video games are, right? It's a cycle of what's coming out next, what's the next thing we're getting to. With something like Animal Crossing, or something like Elden Ring, or something like The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, there's so much creativity and ownership involved, to where in Animal Crossing, it is people showing off their islands, it is people showing off their houses and showing off the characters and all that stuff. In Elden Ring, it's people showing off these different builds and showing off these moments that they're having and playing the game over a long period of time. And now with Tears of the Kingdom, it's people showing off these fucked up contraptions that they made, or incredible contraptions. I have seen things that I did not think I would ever see in this video game after playing it for a few weeks. I saw somebody make a helicarrier. Like, I saw somebody make a fucking, like, like war machines. People just spawning, like, flying war machines with cannons, taking out entire settlements of bokoblins. I have seen incredible things that people have done with this game, and it has sparked so much joy in me.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm starting to get to the place where now, I was talking to Roger about this earlier today, Tears of the Kingdom, it might be hard for me to make the argument that it's not easily better than Breath of the Wild.
Easily
better. Like, in every metric that we were talking about, I was like, dude, it's hard to name a metric in which this game doesn't step things up. I think the one thing, and Barrett brought this up in the conversation, is the fact that Hyrule is familiar, right? Breath of the Wild had that benefit of having a Hyrule that you hadn't explored before. But even on top of that, it's the fact that you're coming back to Hyrule, and every single location that you can think of, there's something new there, and there's something to discover there. And so Tears of the Kingdom is dope. Part of Tears of the Kingdom's dopeness comes from the fact that Breath of the Wild was so dope, right? I have an idea of how cool it was to discover Hateno Village or Kakariko Village or Lurelin or Tarrytown or the Rito. Like, I had all these dope, unique moments in Breath of the Wild. And now when I'm playing Tears of the Kingdom, in my mind, I'm like, oh, I got to get here. I got to get to the Lost Woods at some point. I got to get back to Gerudo Valley to see what's going on here. Like, I have all these locations in my mind that I want and need to follow up on. And that's special. Like, you don't get that often.
No, that's such a good point. And it's something I'm experiencing with this one is, I beat the hell out of Breath of the Wild, but I didn't do everything, like far, far, far from it. And I think because of that, my familiarity with the map is like pretty much non-existent. Like, there's certain things I'm like, of course I remember this, I remember like where certain towns are, but I feel like it's not like Mario 64 where I know every single thing backwards and forwards, where it's like new map, old map, it doesn't really matter to me because there's so much going on that I'm like, I don't remember exactly how things were before, because it was years ago that I played the game and I hadn't replayed Breath of the Wild. So I think there's probably a lot of people out there in my situation that like If you told him, oh yeah, so much of this has changed, he'd be like, hey, I believe you.
It's like, sure, okay.
There's just so much, especially when you add all of the sky stuff and everything else. But I tweeted out over the weekend, Zelda Tears of the Kingdom makes me feel like a freaking genius. I'm unstoppable. My wit is unmatched. Zelda Tears of the Kingdom makes me feel like a freaking idiot. I can be stopped. I am a complete loser. Yep. Repeat every 10 minutes.
Yep.
And that is just my experience in a nutshell, and I fucking love it.
Dude, it's that thing where a lot of the puzzle design of Tears of the Kingdom, I feel like, comes so naturally to me because I really enjoy Nintendo's approach to puzzles, because they're never, usually for the most part, they're never too hard. Usually it is, oh, I just got to think for 20 seconds and I can put together exactly what they're trying to do here. Or with Tears of the Kingdom, usually it is, let me experiment. There are so many different options I have here for how I can approach this problem. So I'm just going to put Legos together and hit it, turn it on, see what happens, and hopefully it works. Usually that's how they go for the most part. There was one shrine that I was playing during the review period that fucked me up, dude. That legitimately, it has to do with rails, right? It's about like you're combining different like boards to then get like a smooth line on the rails to try and get to the end. And I struggled so much with that. And in fact, anything that involves rails in Tears of the Kingdom, I struggle with. Not anymore, though, because I learned that you can make a skateboard.
I can't wait. I haven't done it yet, but I need to.
Yeah, no, as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, this changes everything. Changes everything.
Yeah.
But I posted it on, I quote tweeted on Twitter because Cameron Hawkins put out his tweet of him doing the dungeon. And Cameron Hawkins actually did it by doing the skateboard method. But I was stuck in this dungeon that Barrett has pulled up here forever. Like I did it for like an hour, tried different things, tried combining different ways of doing it, couldn't figure it out, left, came back a second time a few days later to try and see if I can come back to it with a refreshed mind, couldn't figure it out. And then eventually I like, just in playing, I was like, wait a second. And then I had an idea, and then I came back to the dungeon and the idea I had worked, but it definitely wasn't the like meant for way. It wasn't the way that shrine was meant to be solved. I just created my own way because this game lets you create
your own
ways.
And I, oh God, we'll move on from this for a second. But I do want to say, like, that is the most beautiful thing about this game, is that there is the way they want you to, but really the way they want you to is just for you to do it.
Yeah.
And I love that, because in other games, it feels like you're breaking it. This game doesn't feel like you're breaking it. It feels like that is the point. The way that they want you to do it is just a way. It's almost the way they don't necessarily want you to. They're just like, yeah, you could if you needed to.
Like, the main tools they give you in this game are just tools to break the game, which is incredible.
And the game doesn't
have any bugs, which is fucking crazy. Like, the ascend ability,
really quick, I just, again, I think it's to the game's just how excellent it's designed, where even when I can't figure out a shrine and then I have to walk away and I'm doing chores, but I'm still like thinking about it all the time and I'm thinking about this specific shrine, I'm like, wait, what if this is a way that I can do it? And I get excited, even though knowing full well that it probably, like, my solution that I thought in my head probably won't work, and then I go back to it and it doesn't, but then I'm still thinking of all these other new ideas and not getting deterred from it, I think is just fucking excellent. Because that was something that scared me, was all the building stuff, and
yeah,
I'm loving it.
Dude, last night, the stone boss beating my, whatever, stone enemy, beating the shit out of me. Like, one hit kill, and I'm like, there's no way I could do this. But I was being stubborn. Tried. After about 10 attempts, I was like, I just need to stop. Mm-hmm. Went to sleep. Woke up at like 3 in the morning, like, like, it was like, Tim, wake up. It was like that type of shit. Yeah. And I was like, wait a minute. The rewind ability. When he throws a rock at me, I can fucking rewind it, and it'll slam back at him. Woke up this morning, beat the shit out of that guy.
Hell yeah, dude.
Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, everybody. But this is kind of Funny Games Daily, where each and every weekday, we run you through all the video game news that you need to know. Today's stories include Zelda's open world being here to stay, Amazon making a Lord of the Rings MMO, and more. Because, like I said, this is kind of Funny Games Daily every single weekday, 10 a.m. live, twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. That's exactly where you're going to want to be. But if you can't be there live, you can watch us later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames or podcast services around the globe. Just search for Kind of Funny Games Daily, and we will be right there for you. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on all the places I just named. I messed that up. Meant to say kindoffunny.com/KFGD is where you can go to write in all of your questions, comments, concerns, whatever it is that you want to talk about under the video game sun. If video games aren't your thing and movies and TV are, guess what? YouTube.com/kindoffunny, screencast podcast feed, interview podcast feed, they are popping off right now. We just did our Fast 5 rewatch leading into Fast 10, the beginning of a new and potentially final trilogy of Fast and Furious movies, everybody. Woo! What a time to be a part of the family. Remember, patreon.com/kindoffunny is where you're going to want to go to get the shows ad-free, to get a bevy of bonus content, like an amazing episode of the shit list we just did.
Yes,
where Bless and I went through the first half of GQ's top 100 games of all time. And it was a good episode.
Great episode.
We're doing 50 to 1.
Yes, sir.
So, hey, Patreon's a great place to be right now. Some housekeeping for you. On Friday, March 19th, we are celebrating Kevin and Mike's birthdays with a special subathon marathon stream. We're going to get in our PJs, build a fort, and go late if you want it. Come join us for some snacks, games, and sleepover vibes. That's this Friday, everybody. This Friday, hang out with your favorite boys. And then only on YouTube and live stream, we're going to be doing a 30-minute post show after Games Daily, where Snowbike Mike's going to come in, talk to us about your questions about the news stories today, or whatever video game stuff you want to talk about.
The first bit of housekeeping. Keeping for the slumber party, that was something that Nick wrote in, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's May 19th, not March 19th.
May 19th, everybody. May 19th. May 19th. I was just banana.
He's old.
That one, you know?
I know. Nick doesn't even know what year it is. You know?
Who knows, man? Thank you to our Patreon producer, Delaney Twining, for putting up with our bullshit. Today, we're brought to you by Shady Rays, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have 8 stories today, and there's a lot of big ones.
A baker's dozen.
Story number 1. Keeping this Zelda hype rolling on, Bless. Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom is the second biggest Nintendo launch in UK history. This comes from Christopher Dring at GamesIndustry.biz. Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, a.k.a. TOTK, is the biggest box video game launch of the year in the UK. They also revealed the game is Nintendo's second biggest release in UK history by revenue, behind 2008's Wii Fit.
Wow.
If we discount the balance board price, it's actually the biggest Nintendo release by revenue. In terms of units, the game only lags behind Wii Fit and combined sales of Pokemon games, namely combined sales of Sun and Moon and Scarlet and Violet. Its opening week sales eclipse the box sales of Hogwarts Legacy by more than 50%. This is just box sales, and Hogwarts, which was released on PC, PS5, and Xbox Series S and X in February, did have a very strong digital launch. Switch digital sales are typically much lower than the other platforms, so it's unknown if the game outsold Hogwarts overall. It's easily the biggest Zelda launch in history, selling more than 2.7 times the opening week sales of Breath of the Wild from 2017. Nick Scarpino.
I had 3 people read that housekeeping.
Yeah.
You were one of them.
I just did right now, and I fucked it up.
Apparently it was like that on Friday, too.
Great, everyone. Tune in a year and a half from now, March 19th, for our subathon.
Yeah. May 19th, this weekend.
A year and a half. Fun.
Friday.
A year and a half would be like.
That would be like November.
Hey, you know what? We don't do math here, okay?
All right, a year and 1/8. How about that? Captain Semantics. Oh, what is that? Woo, woo. It's the semantic police. Where are they? Oh, my God.
It's called humor extrapolate.
March was like 2 months ago. It's 10 months. It's not called, even a year.
It's called humor extrapolate, he said.
You know what? You guys are disinvited to the March 19th stream.
Oh, God.
You want to go to a rooftop and play Zelda together?
Oh, let's go. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be next March, and so we're talking about, the Switch 2 at that point?
Maybe some DLC.
Let's go.
Oh, my God. Anyway, the last line there I want to read again because I think this is important. It's easily the biggest Zelda launch in history, selling more than 2.7 times the opening week sales of Breath of the Wild from 2017.
Goddamn.
Yeah, man. So that's
And that's in UK specifically.
Exactly. These early numbers usually are, right? UK kind of talks about their numbers differently than the NPD does over here. Again, Nintendo not releasing its digital sales until their kind of like annual fiscal discussions that they have. Makes sense, the 2.7 times, just in the sense that the Switch is now in probably 100 million more hands than it was back then, being the launch of the system. But, you know, we're talking about the follow-up to what is probably like the most important launch title of all time, and like that's keeping in mind like Wii Sports and Mario 64 and stuff, like the numbers and sheer revitalization.
You
of
put
a
that
franchise.
As most important.
I mean, I think in the sense of like Zelda being an iconic video game franchise, like an important franchise, a critically acclaimed franchise. Breath of the Wild put it on the map of being a system seller and a just the seller itself,
yeah,
right? To the point that these numbers are ridiculously insane. Mm. And I think that because of that, like it boosted the Switch in a way. I mean, think about where we were at the Wii U, right?
Oh, for sure.
You know, but yeah, I don't know. I think that this is exciting. This is a win for Nintendo. Also, $70. Not $60.
I mean, that's a really good point, right? When we're talking about revenue, that's one point I didn't even think about. Yeah, this is going to make more money. And I assume it's going to sell more units overall, just based on sequels usually sell more than the original title. Right now, in terms of sales for Breath of the Wild, as of March 31st, 2023, we're looking at 29.81 million units. And I've always been a little bit surprised about where Breath of the Wild falls in terms of overall Switch sales, because it's number 4, which is really high for a platform, but it is under Smash Ultimate, Animal Crossing, and then Mario Kart 8 Deluxe.
But it's number 4 on the Switch.
On the Switch.
Which is like one of the most loaded software, if not the most loaded software sales console of all time.
Yeah, especially for like, when we're talking about first party.
I want to make sure I'm right about that, but like, yeah, because if you start counting Grand Theft Auto and Call of Duty, but like if you're just talking about like exclusives on systems, like
easily 1,000%. I don't think
so. It's like it being number 4, a Zelda game, which is not traditionally there at all. Like we're talking about sales numbers where Breath of the Wild is like pretty much like all the rest combined. You know?
Yeah. So my question is, where does Tears of the Kingdom land overall? Do you think 3 years from now, are we talking about Tears of the Kingdom being higher than Smash Ultimate?
So here's the thing. I mean, it's complicated because I don't know. That I think that the initial sales of Tears of the Kingdom are going to be astronomical, but yeah. I don't know that it ever can catch up.
You don't think it's going to have this big dogs power?
Because like everyone got Breath of the Wild when they just got their Switch. I mean, yeah, would they not hear? I mean,
I think the only
look at Pokemon sales, right?
Yeah,
and on Pokemon Sword and Shield was like it broke records for Pokemon. And then Scarlet and Violet came out, and it just broke even more records. And Scarlet and Violet has not yet crossed Sword and Shield, but it's only been out
for four.
I guess at this point it's been
like 7 months.
Yeah, 7 months. But the next time we get updated numbers, it will eclipse it. So yeah, Tears of the Kingdom will eclipse. I think so.
It's been 7 months. I guess it's been like 6 months. God damn, time flies.
I know.
Time is crazy.
Yeah, we're halfway through May.
Yeah, like so when you're talking about Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, right? Pokemon Scarlet and Violet right now is sitting at number 7 with 22.10 million units, and then you move up a couple of spots to Pokemon Sword and Shield, which has about 3 million more than that, sitting at 25.82 million. I think the thing that might keep Tears of the Kingdom, or propel it, depending on how Nintendo handles it, would be new hardware, right? If the Switch 2 comes out and comes with more exciting, you know, software, comes with like the next Mario, comes with whatever, and that is, let's say, 2024. Do people start to look toward the new? Does that start to slow down the long term, I guess, just the longevity of Tears of the Kingdom sales over time? Or does Nintendo play it smart and go, hey, with the Switch 2, here's a unique version of Tears of the Kingdom that is the deluxe edition? Because that, if they do that, this game is for sure getting top 3 in terms of software sales on the Switch.
Yeah. I mean, if that counts, like however they do that. Sure. Yeah. Look, here's the thing. It's going to sell extremely well. It's going to, I think, eventually break the top 10. And having multiple Zeldas with this level of sales is the most impressive thing ever.
Oh, so good for the franchise.
They did it this generation. On top of so many other countless franchises that we've talked about before, like Kirby and Metroid selling better than they ever have, Fire Emblem. Like, it's just on a roll. 3D Mario. Like, I don't think there's many examples of games not selling best on Switch when it comes to Nintendo. So congrats to them on the sales.
My prediction, and I don't know how to check in on this, I guess check in 4 years, 4 or 5 years. I think it sells higher than Smash Ultimate. I don't think it surpasses Animal Crossing, which might be a safe bet, but that seems about right, and I think that'll be huge, right? Like, this is a game that right now, as we're seeing it on social media, it has that Animal Crossing level of virality to it, where everybody's making content about it because the creation and fusing and crafting stuff is so dope and so easily, like, it translates really well to that short form content creation that's on fire right now. The TikToks I've been seeing of people building shit, like the things people have been showing in terms of vehicles, mechs. I saw somebody make a literal Trojan horse where they created a horse out of boards and then they ascended themselves into it and then rode it into like a thing. People are so creative. And I think that's really going to push it in terms of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom being in the content creation space over the course of the whole year, if not the next few years.
Yeah, I do think there's something to be said too about the fact that I'm sure there are spoilers in this game, and for people that really care about Zelda, like, there's going to be a lot of things that they want to know for the first time.
Yeah.
And I know there's some people that are sensitive to the point of, like, not even wanting to know what puzzles there are or what enemies they come up against or whatever. But I think that there's just so much quality content in this game that the fear of being spoiled by every single thing isn't there in the same way that God of War or something, where, yeah, like, spoilers are kind of the point of the experience, more so, like, way more so, I'd say, than this. And the point of this is more the creative ways to go about things, or the moments of discovery. But there are so many moments of discovery that I wouldn't mind if I saw like half of them, because I probably am not even going to come across a percentage of those throughout my playtime.
For sure. Yeah, I think this is more it, man, this might be something to speak to Nintendo games in general and how they design and how this reflects in sales, but Nintendo, I think they're more so going for, like, the everlasting gobstopper of, hey, yeah, this game is meant to be played over time. Like, this is a game that we want to have staying power, because that is what we have as Nintendo. We have the first party. Whereas for PlayStation first party, for example, yeah, like, the first, let's say, 3 days sales are so important when we're talking about a PlayStation first party game. The first week sales, the immediate sales, because it is, hey, this is the big push we're making. And then you see sales drop off over time, right? Like, of course, God of War is always going to sell. Last of Us is always going to sell. But we have those moments like Last of Us TV show that comes through and really and boost it up. And then sales come back down from there, because that is how people consume these games. It is, we're going to play this and then on to the next one, in the way that we were talking about God of War. Zelda, Animal Crossing, Pokemon, Mario Kart, the fact that they're still putting out Mario Kart 8 Deluxe DLC, and they're still pushing that as the thing, and it's hit over 50 million units as a piece of software. Like, Nintendo is, yeah, designing for that long term. This is a game, through playing it, you can even tell, this is a game they want people to stick with over a long course of time, and so that makes sense.
We need to move on to the next story here, but real quick, I just want to say, in terms of these numbers and Nintendo and stuff, something that, like, really blows my mind is you bringing up Last of Us and how much it boosted the sales of The Last of Us games. The Mario movie came out, changed the game when it came to animated, box office, all the stuff in so many different ways, Illumination, whatever. And they didn't have a new Mario game. And they didn't have a new Mario Kart.
It is interesting.
And yeah, it's like, I'm sure that boosted the sales from, like, the legacy stuff, but it's just like,
I wonder how much it boosted the sales for the legacy stuff, though.
I don't know. I mean,
like, I'm sure it
didn't
somewhat
have Mario Kart already, but I wonder how much it's going to boost Mario Kart sales at some point. But the other thing is Mario the movie. I think it was Greg last week on Game Daily was telling me that it's coming to digital next week.
Yeah,
and I was like, "There's no way. Like, yeah. There's no way. It is.
It's on the new dates.
It's coming to digital next week." And, like, there's just so much money that's being left on the table, but it's because so many, in my theory at least, is there's so many blockbusters this summer that now with Guardians out and with Fast 10 coming out this week and then Spider-Verse and there's all this stuff, there's just not enough screens for it to be in theaters. But I saw Mario the movie in theaters last weekend, and the theater was absolutely packed with kids.
Hell yeah.
And I imagine they want to just, like you're saying with the summer blockbuster thing, I imagine that they want to keep the momentum of, like, Mario bringing money in, but just in a different kind of platform, which I don't think Nintendo really cares about one way or the other, if it's in theaters or if it's out digitally, because, yeah, I haven't seen it, and I'm stoked. I didn't know that was coming digitally next week. So
yeah,
tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, tomorrow?
Tomorrow, yeah, man. Wow, that's just, it's, oh my God. So much money on the table, but whatever. It is what it is. Story number two. Open World Zelda is a format for the future of the series, says producer Eiji Aonuma. This is from Ed Nightingale at Eurogamer. Zelda series producer has stated that Breath of the Wild style gameplay continued in Tears of the Kingdom is a new kind of format for the future of the series. In an interview with Game Informer, Aonuma asked if the open world design would be the foundation for the next several games, just as Ocarina of Time previously established the 3D format. He agreed Ocarina of Time did create a format, but it was ultimately restricted for the designers, while Breath of the Wild offered a new type of play. Quote, with Ocarina of Time, I think it's correct to say that it did kind of create a format for a number of titles in the franchise that came after it, but in some ways that was a little bit restricting for us. While we always aimed to give the players freedom of certain kinds, there were certain things that format didn't really afford in giving people freedom. Of course, the series continued to evolve after Ocarina, but I think it's also fair to say now that we've arrived at Breath of the Wild and the new type of more open play and freedom that it affords. Yeah, I think it's correct to say that it's created a new kind of format for the series to proceed from. He also commented on puzzle design and the variety of solutions available to players, noting it's okay to cheat. Quote, when you think about people, cheating is fun.
I mean,
out of the box, I guess. When thinking, wait, sorry. When you think about people, cheating is fun. He laughs. They like it. Finding that shortcut is enjoyable. People will look for an easy way to do something if they can avoid struggling. We want to make sure that it's something that stayed in this game. And it seems the style of puzzle solving is here to stay. When thinking of games in the past that we've worked on, where there was a puzzle to solve and only one answer, that's kind of the past way of developing games. Now I'm happy that we've arrived at this method where we're giving people lots of options, and there are many answers to a single problem, and all of them can potentially be correct. I feel happy that we've arrived at this type of development style, he said.
I mean, there's a lot to get into here, but I do love that he echoes what we were talking about earlier in terms of the cheating is fun thing. Mm-hmm. Hey, let's give people a variety of ways to solve a puzzle and feel like they can jank their way through it if they want to, or find a new creative way to solve it if they want to. It's the way that in my review I talked about how there was a shrine where I found a fan and there was a treasure chest at the top of like a thing, and I needed to get up there to get the treasure chest. And instead of doing the smart thing, which would be to hit the fan to turn it on and then use my glider to carry me up, instead I used Ultra Hand to then carry the fan upwards. I slowly lowered it down. I got on top of the fan, and then I used Recall to then rewind the fan up so that I can get to the ledge because I overthought it. Like, if you're
blew my mind, Bless. Yeah. Oh my God, that would have saved me like 15 minutes in the shrine last night.
When I tell you there are so many puzzles I solved that way, like, I skipped major puzzles just by using the recall in the Ultra Hand, just by holding a thing up, putting it down, recalling it, and using it to lift me up. Fun fact, if you are on the ground and you have a glider and you want to, like, let's say you're on a sky island without like a rail to shoot the glider from. If you want that glider to get air and start flying, use that. Like, hold it up, slowly lower it down, get on it, recall it until it gets high, and then undo recall, and then you can just take off from the air.
See, this right here, Bless, me and you sitting here, you just blowing my mind, telling me something that is going to change the way that I play this game for the next, 70 hours? I don't know. This reminds me of being a little kid on the playground, being at elementary school, talking to people about, you know, if you did this, you get Mew in Pokemon Red. Like, yep, that type of stuff where half of it's real, half of it's fake, but it's real because we're all adults. Yeah. And we're all helping each other. It's just such a fun community experience. Like, this is incredible. Thank you, Nintendo.
My mind was blown when I saw, I think it was the GameSpot video where they made the skateboard, right? Using the minecart. Fuse the minecart to the shield, and now you can just skateboard around, and you can use that to grind. I played this game for over 70 hours and I didn't even think about that. And that's such a smart thing. I've seen people do the same thing with bombs where they'll fuse a bomb to a shield, do the thing where they, you know, flip it into a skateboard or whatever, or sled, and then use the bomb will blow up and that'll launch them because the shield is protecting them from the bottom. And so they use that to like elevate and gain air. Such cool things. In that puzzle I was talking about earlier that I was convinced that there was no right way to solve it, I saw Cameron Hawkins' method, which was using his minecart shield to grind the rails. I saw the actual method, right, which is to create the long board and then put three boards like evenly distributing weight. God, why are we talking about this like this physics?
Because it is.
But yeah, you do the boards and then you can transition from the two rails to the one rail. I've seen that. The way I did it was I made a board going long ways with like the fin on the bottom to slide up one rail. And then as I was doing that, I was holding another board that was built the same way. And I put it on the second rail while holding it and then jumped to it so I could then go the rest of the way. These are all various ways of solving that one problem. Of course, my way was super jank. Cameron Hawkins' way was super creative. And the default way was the smart way to do it. But all of them work, right? At the end of the day, we all got the light of blessing that we were looking for, and we're able to be satisfied with that. And so, yeah, I love that. That's first and foremost. The other thing, though, is that I kind of miss classic 3D Zelda design.
Of course.
And I wish, and maybe we'll get there someday.
We will.
I'll love the scenario where we can get all three types of Zeldas, it is classic top-down 2D Zelda, classic 3D Ocarina-style Zelda, and then the new Breath of the Wild Tears of the Kingdom type Zelda.
Plus, let me tell you something. You're not only going to get those, you're going to get remakes of probably all of those. Mm-hmm. You're also going to get a Zelda Maker type thing. It's Nintendo. Like, they have a blueprint, they stick to it, and they keep going. And I think they're going to continue to keep doing that. Like, we're going to, I believe it in my heart of hearts, we're going to get Wind Waker and Twilight Princess HD on the Switch, right? Mm-hmm. Once that happens, the majority of Zelda games will be playable on Switch of classic times. I think it's inevitable at this rate that we're going to get an Ocarina of Time remake. But I don't want that yet. Like, I want an Ocarina of Time remake when things are actually 4K and things are actually, like... Like, I want the Resident Evil 2 remake of Ocarina of Time, or else at this point, we don't really need it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it needs to be a substantial step up, because the 3DS remake, whatever you want to call that, was awesome. And, like, but now it's stuck on the 3DS. So I feel like we're going to get those things. I think we're going to... I brought up Resident Evil. I think Resident Evil is actually a really good analog franchise where we now see that there's the new games that are the first person 7, 8, potentially 9 type style of RE. We get the remakes that are 2, 3, 4 that are taking the old ones and kind of modernizing them in like this amazing way that somehow just works beautifully. But then we also get the spin-offs with like Revelations and things like that that are more like old school traditional Resident Evil games. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly like it, but it's like it's close enough. I do think that we're going to get at this point a Zelda spin-off game in the same way that like Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks on the DS. Like, those are core Zelda games, but they always felt a little weird because they were really tied to the DS's functionality and stuff. Like, that it's debatably a spinoff, but it's also core. I think we're going to get some of those. I would not be surprised if the next thing Grezzo is working on, which is the people that made Link's Awakening Remake, I think they also worked on Luigi's Mansion 3. That's wrong. That's Next Level. That's wrong, too. I'm fucking this up. You're wrong, me. Let me know what's going on there. But I think Grezzo could be working on a new, more traditional Zelda. Whether it's...
Yeah. I mean, they worked on the Ocarina of Time remake for 3DS, yeah. And then also Majora's Mask remake.
So I can see them...
I could also see them doing the Oracle games. Like, there's totally. Still so many classic games that, like... Yeah, I think the Oracle games are available on Switch now, but there's still so much that they could play around with if they... want to continue doing more like remake stuff. I could also see just like talking about the 3D space of the difference between the Ocarina type games and more of the Breath of the Wild type games. I do see a future where they could try to find the best of both worlds there, because I think what the promise of Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom delivers is what they were looking for in the very original Legend of Zelda. Tim, you're talking about like the on the playground, talking about finding secrets and stuff, and like that was the core of what they wanted the Legend of Zelda to be, of just getting lost and finding your own discoveries and making it feel like your own. Whereas a few entries after that is when you got more of the guided, let's go to a temple here, a temple there. And I think there's a way for them to do an open world, but still bring in the kind of like more traditional like Ocarina of Time or Twilight Princess type of things, because it's not like those games were like linear where you're like it's like corridors and stuff. There's still exploration in those, so I think there's I don't know if they can do the let's put 120 shrines in an open world over and over again, so I wouldn't be surprised if that's something that like they're trying to experiment of like how do they redefine an open world for themselves.
Well, that's what I would like for the next big Zelda game. I love the current Hyrule we're in, but I feel like after Tears of the Kingdom, they've gotten so much juice out of it, and I would like, especially because I imagine by the time we get to the next big Zelda, we're going to be on a new platform. I want the next reincarnation, the next iteration. I want a new Zelda world. I want them to keep the Breath of the Wild mechanics and like the stuff that's made Tears of the Kingdom, Breath of the Wild dope. I want them to keep that those elements, the open world. I would like the shrines, actually. I don't know how many. Like 120 shrines is a lot, but I would like a lot of these elements that we have. But I would like a new story, a new world, like a new Link, a new Zelda. I want them to explore those things. I think for me, that is my biggest desire coming off of Tears of the Kingdom and seeing what he's talking about. I think a good way to go about it, if you were trying to figure out a way to breathe in fresh new life, would be to look toward the past for inspiration. Figure out, okay, what did people
like find? I don't know, like a link to the past?
Yeah, find a link to the past.
Got it.
God, could you imagine this type of Zelda, but like literally you're going like back and forth through time? I know that's literally a Zelda thing that we've gotten before, but like in this new iteration of Zelda I'm talking about.
I mean, dude, yeah, there's so many limitless possibilities and potential. I saw a couple of people in the chat saying that I'm in a dream world. We got Metroid 5, y'all. We got Metroid Dread, all right?
It's true. We did.
Like, it takes a while for Nintendo, but eventually it happens. Eventually it happens. The bill always comes due. And speaking of bills, we need to pay ours. You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to get the show ad-free. But for everyone else... That was a 10 out of 10. Here's a word from our sponsor. Shout out to Shady Rays for sponsoring this episode. Do you want to look as cool as I look? Yes, you do. And you can. You can take on the sun with gear built to last. Our friends at Shady Rays have you covered for the warm weather ahead with premium polarized shades at an unbeatable price. Shady Rays is an independent sunglasses company that offers a world-class product that's just as good as any expensive pair that I've ever worn in my life. Every pair of sunglasses is backed by lost and broken replacements. If you lose or break your pair, even on day one, they told us they will send you a brand new pair, no questions asked. You can wear your Shady Rays with confidence because they have your back long after you purchase. Exclusively for you listeners, Shady Rays is giving out their best deal of the season. You can go to shadyrays.com and use the code KINDOFFUNNY. You can get 50% off two plus pairs of polarized sunglasses. You can try for yourself the shades that are rated 5 stars by over 250,000 people. Promo code KINDOFFUNNY at shadyrays.com. Story number three, Amazon's making a Lord of the Rings MMO for PC and consoles. This comes from Tom Ivan at VGC. Amazon Games will develop and publish a massively multiplayer online game based on the Lord of the Rings. The PC and console title will be an open-world MMO adventure in a persistent world set in Middle-earth, featuring the beloved stories of The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings literary trilogy, according to Monday's announcement. It's in the early stages of production, with development led by Amazon Games Orange County, the studio behind fellow open-world MMO New World, the company's first success after many failures and setbacks in gaming, according to Amazon founder Jeff Bezos. Interesting that
they consider it a success.
That they consider it a success and that they own the many failures.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you release an unreleased Crucible in a month, you got to own that. Like, nobody saw that and went, oh, yeah, we did it. We did the damn thing.
You know what I mean? I don't know that Jeff Bezos has to own anything, because he already does.
Because he owns everything. For Jeff Bezos, on his list of failures, that's low on the totem pole. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, Crucible, whatever. Have you seen my marriage?
Bringing players a fresh take on The Lord of the Rings has long been an aspiration for our team, and we're honored and grateful that Middle-earth Enterprises is entrusting us with this iconic world, said Christoph Hartmann, who's Amazon Games VP.
Cool. This is a great idea, honestly. Like, I'm not somebody who's into MMOs like New World, and I'm also not a Lord of the Rings person. I'm sure a Snowmike Mike or an Andy Cortez is going crazy about this. But it's also a good idea, right? They have the rights to Lord of the Rings games, and yeah, like, do something with that. If you're trying to expand Amazon Games and you got IP like Lord of the Rings, do the damn thing. Like, this makes sense. And a Lord of the Ring MMO, one, we've gotten that, right? Like, that's a thing that already exists. But yeah, if you're having the New World team work on it and you have confidence and faith in the New World team, for
Lord,
sure. Make
Lord
that
of
happen.
The Rings Online, that has to be a thing, right?
1,000%. When you were saying that, I thought you were about to talk about the game and be like, oh yeah, I played Lord of the Rings Online.
No, I definitely did not. But
if I type in Lord of the Rings Online, let's see what
it
happens.
It still exists. 16 years old now, DJ Mayer says in the chat.
Lord of the Rings.
Got a 9 out of 10 on Steam ratings. IGN gave it an 8.6 out of 10.
Release date, June 6th, 2012. Join the world's greatest fellowship of players in the award-winning online recreation of J.R.R. Tolkien's legendary Middle Earth.
Cool. Now I get another one. From Amazon.
Cool.
Maybe. Maybe not. We'll see if this happens.
I assume it's going to come out, right?
I don't know. Maybe. It's a really early announcement. We'll keep you updated here on Kind of Funny Games.
We'll keep you updated.
Story number four. Square Enix considering creating new studios and acquiring existing ones. This comes from Amelia Zollner at IGN. Between the releases of Crisis Core, Final Fantasy VII Reunion, Forspoken, and Octopath Traveler 2, it's been another busy year for Square Enix. Still, though, the company hopes to expand, and this might include forming or acquiring new studios. Today, Square Enix revealed that it's thinking about creating new studios and acquiring existing studios as part of its plan to grow its in-house development resources. According to slides from the company's full earnings report released today, Square Enix plans to consider M&A, creating new studios, and taking minority stakes to build in more external development resources. In addition, it plans to hire more engineers and developers, quote, to develop not only HD and smart device games, but also content for future cross-platform offerings. Square Enix also revealed that sales and profit were down during its 2023 fiscal year, though it partially attributed this to the lack of expansions in comparison to last year's DLC for 14. The company forecasts a stronger year in 2024, fiscal year 2024. Earlier this year, Forspoken developer Luminous Productions was absorbed back into Square Enix to continue working on AAA games, but in March, Square Enix said that Forspoken sales were lackluster. Its president also recently stepped down after a 10-year run that ended in controversial blockchain advocacy.
Tim, you're a Square Enix higher up.
Mm-hmm.
you're in charge of forming some new Square Enix studios. What are you having them do? You having them work on new IP? You having them work on old IP that's been dormant? What you doing?
It's complicated, Bless. I don't know. At this point in time, Square's in such an interesting place. We talk about acquisitions a lot on this show and a lot of our shows. And we're about to talk a little bit about the Microsoft Activision Blizzard situation again. Mm-hmm. And in a world where we see a lot of the smaller guys kind of get gobbled up, now these days some of the bigger guys get gobbled up, Square's always been in that conversation. And there's always arguments against it, many arguments against it. One of them being Japanese companies, traditionally harder to acquire, to deal with all the legal stuff. And we see even non-Japanese companies have to deal with that and how complicated it could be. Square recently getting rid of Crystal and Eidos, which is very interesting, right? Like shedding the Western developers that kind of diversified their portfolio in a really immense way with a lot of hits, a lot of well-selling
like
games.
A lot of notable Tomb Raider, Hitman.
Franchises, right? Mm-hmm. And access to licenses from Marvel with Guardians of the Galaxy and Avengers. Now, granted, those things didn't necessarily turn out the way Square wanted them to, critically in some ways, sales-wise in others. But there was something there. So for them to get rid of that and shed that, come here, put out Forspoken, and then reabsolve Luminous back. Mm-hmm. It's like, what is the plan here? What is the strategy? Because they have so many games that come out. They have their Final Fantasies. They have the Dragon Quest. They have their HD 2D stuff, Octopath, Bravely Default. They kind of have the market like locked when it comes to PlayStation and Nintendo, right? Their games sell very well on Nintendo. They put out a bazillion of them.
Yeah, and they have
Nintendo
consistency. Like when you talk about, you know, they're talking about Square Enix sales and profit being down during the 2023 fiscal year. And the next sentence or next part of the sentence says, though it partially, this was partially attributed to the lack of expansions for the Final Fantasy 14. And we're talking about Final Fantasy 14. Like that is their golden goose. Like, I think just keep shitting out golden eggs. Like, that is such a profit for them. And yeah, they've found this flow of putting out JRPGs of every scale, right? Whether we're talking about the big dogs, like Final Fantasy 16 about to come out, or we're talking about smaller stuff, like Everyday Daylife, or whatever the fuck that game was called last year, right? Like, yeah, they have that market cornered, and maybe that falls into why they're like, hey, let's get rid of Crystal Dynamics and Eidos. Like, let's focus in on these things that are working consistently for us. But I remember your read on it back then being that, like, oh yeah, they're for sure shedding themselves for acquisition. And I still think they're probably in that place still, but...
So it's interesting because they're making moves that are against common knowledge of what you want to do when you're trying to be acquired. Mm-hmm. But having said that, they're in a unique position where there's a lot of financial gain to be had playing the game how they're doing it right now. And I don't know what that could look like, but again, there's the pros and cons of doing it for them and for the consumers and for everybody. But I think that the more and more we look at Square in 2023, but potentially 2024 and all that, their partnerships and kind of like aligning with Nintendo for the titles that are now also crossing back over to PlayStation and Xbox even, right? With is Octopath Traveler 2 on Xbox or is it just PlayStation?
Ooh, that's a really good question.
I imagine it's on both. But for the big AAA stuff being exclusive on PlayStation and then the like still big titles like Octopath Traveler 2 and things like that coming to Switch, like Square kind of has it locked that they don't need to be acquired.
Octopath is not yet on Xbox. Octopath 2 at least.
I found an article that says, according to the game's producer, Masashi Takahashi, Square Enix decided to cancel Octopath Traveler 2 on Xbox after observing the sales of the other titles.
Wow.
That's from xputer.com.
Yeah, so it's real interesting. So again, I struggle to see a Square wanting to get acquired or people even wanting to acquire them with the fact that so much of the value is tied to Nintendo. Like, I don't see that changing. And I also don't see PlayStation acquiring them and allowing that to maintain. Because this is not like a Microsoft Minecraft situation. I think it's a lot bigger than that. So I don't know where we're at now. But anyway, to go back to your original question of what I would do, I don't know. Kind of keep going. I think Square's kind of kicking ass right now. I know that there's been some major blunders and mistakes, so much microtransaction or NFT talk and metaverse and all that stuff. But like, everyone's talking.
Never forget
about
Babylon's Fall.
And there are Babylon's Falls. There's Forspoken that just happened, right? But it is important.
Square Enix has a major blunder every year.
Yeah, the Quiet
One major. The Quiet Man. What was the one, the platformer that was really bad? Balance Wonderworld.
Dude, there's a lot of failures. Having said that, there's a lot of incredible sequels, reboots, remasters, new IP. Like, across the board, Square has great examples of all those things, and not many other developers have that, and publishers have that. Like, they might have one or the other or whatever. Square has it all. It also has failures in most of those realms as well. But also MMOs, like with Final Fantasy, like they really just have locks across many of gaming's different kind of verticals of like what we expect from modern video games. Something's in my eye now. It's really annoying me. But I
it's the red dot from the Square Enix.
Yeah.
Their lawyers, they're like, take him out. He knows too much.
But I totally lost what I was going with that. But yeah, Square's, I think they're kind of killing it right now. And they're taking swings. And a Forspoken wasn't great, and most people didn't love it. But hey, at least it was something new. And like, people always want new IP. That's a new IP. Yeah. You know, people want good new IP. And I get that. But it's like, they're taking the swing in a major way. That was a very big, expensive video game.
Yeah.
You know?
And it just wasn't it, sadly.
Wasn't it? Let's move on to story number 5. I teased it earlier, but here it is. The EU approves Microsoft's $68.7 billion Activision Blizzard bid. This comes from Tom Phillips at Eurogamer. Microsoft's stalled Activision Blizzard buyout received some positive news today as the EU offered its approval. The European Commission had been one of three major regulators standing in the way of the deal alongside the U.S. Federal Trade Commission and the U.K.'s Competition and Markets Authority, the latter of which dramatically blocked the deal last month, dealing a sizable blow to its succeeding overall. Microsoft is now set to appeal that decision. In Brussels, however, it's better news for Microsoft after a couple of concessions ended up winning over EU regulators. Crucially, the EU has given the nod to the deal after securing agreements to lessen its potential impact on the emerging cloud gaming market, the main sticking point with the UK's regulator. This includes a free license for European gamers to stream any Activision Blizzard game they own via any cloud gaming service of their choice, and a free license for cloud gaming services in the region to host said games on their platform. The EU ultimately dismissed its earlier concerns around the deal's potential to harm rival console makers like Sony and Nintendo and game subscription services like PlayStation Plus. Ultimately, the EU decided Microsoft was unlikely to pull Activision Blizzard games like Call of Duty from rival consoles, as it would see profits suffer as a result, an argument Microsoft itself repeatedly put forward. However, the EU also decided that even if Microsoft did pull Call of Duty from PlayStation, as Sony would be able to leverage its size, extensive games catalog, and market position to fend off any attempt to weaken its competitive position. On cloud streaming, the EU found that the deal was unlikely to change much, as the market is still very limited today. Indeed, the EU said it believes the deal could actually promote its growth. So that was said. And the CMA, the ones that blocked Xbox, they're like, okay, cool, I guess you're right. That's fine. Let's let it happen.
That's not what they said.
Psych. That ain't
what. That's not what they said.
That ain't what happened.
Clap back.
They turned to the Twitter fingers here, right? They go to Twitter and on the CMA's official Twitter.
Which I didn't know they had. That's funny, first of all, that the CMA has an official Twitter.
Yeah. And they did a little thread here saying, our response to the European Commission's announcement today on Microsoft/Activision, 1 out of 5. And then they put the little thread emoji. They didn't.
Oh, they're not scoring it.
They
didn't
1 out of 5. That, but the UK, US, and European Commission authorities are unanimous that this merger would harm competition in cloud gaming. The CMA concluded that cloud gaming needs to continue as a free, competitive market to drive innovation and choice in this rapidly evolving sector. Microsoft's proposals, accepted by the European Commission today, would allow Microsoft to set the terms and conditions for this market for the next 10 years. They would replace a free, open, and competitive market with one subject to ongoing regulation of the games Microsoft sells, the platforms to which it sells them, and the conditions of sale. This is one of the reasons the CMA's independent panel group rejected Microsoft's proposals and prevented this deal. While we recognize and respect that the European Commission is entitled to take a different view, the CMA stands by its decision.
This is very fascinating because I didn't know that different marketing merging authorities had like a back and forth in this way where it's, oh, they approved it, but let's put out our statement and reinforce why we didn't approve it. I wonder why. Like, I wonder why that is the case, why CMA would feel the need to do that. I wonder if that is a reputation thing of, hey, we're standing our ground and we believe in our decision. We want people to know that we're a trustworthy authority and this is our reasons, even though I think their reasons are bad. And that's me saying that as like, I don't have a horse in this race. Whether or not Microsoft acquires Activision or doesn't get to acquire Activision, I'm very much an onlooker and I'm fascinated either way. But that said, EU has a good like, it's the European Commission seems to have a pretty good understanding of what all this is. Like, as you read through the reasoning and as you read through their read on it, it's like, yeah, like, no, Microsoft would lose money if they pull Call of Duty off of PlayStation, so they don't have a monopoly there. You know, where the contracts make it so now people can play Call of Duty through any cloud platform, which is wild, right? Like, the idea of, if you're a cloud gaming service, you get a free license for to host Call of Duty on whatever platform. That's fucking wild. I didn't know that was the case, and that's actually, like, huge. And that also makes, that also reinforces the idea of, what is the CMA's issue? Like, why is the CMA so hung up on this? So that's also. But then, yeah, like, you know, the European Commission seems like they understand this, or what's going on here, way more than the CMA. Like, the CMA, they keep reinforcing the cloud thing, and I don't get it. Like, I don't, cloud seems like such a small part of this whole thing, but they keep hammering it home. And, like, I assume, like, Microsoft just said that they're going to, you know, come back and try again, right? And, like, make this thing happen. And I assume at this point that they're gonna make it happen. Man, I don't know. I just find the CMA thing so weird, the fact that they're blocking it on these reasons. Like, if there are other reasons, I'd be like, all right, cool, whatever. But, like, just based on the cloud shit alone, I'm like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah, man. Well, we're going to keep talking about this, I'm sure, forever. But before we do that, let me tell you about stories number 6 and 7. I'm going to read these two together because they're both similar. They're both sad. And it's unfortunate overall. PlayStation-backed Deviation Games hit with layoffs. And The Witcher spin-off studio hit with significant layoffs. This comes from Jordan Midler at VGC and Hiren Cryer at GamesRadar. PlayStation-backed studio Deviation Games has been hit with layoffs, with sources telling VGC as many as 90 members of staff may have been affected. Several now ex-employees of Deviation have announced their departure on social media, with software engineer Kyle Paris writing that, my student recently ran into a difficult situation and was forced to make a number of layoffs, which I was a part of. In September last year, one of Deviation's games co-founders, Chief Creative Officer Jason Blundell, left the studio. The studio is developing an original IP, which will be published by Sony Interactive Entertainment. And then the Witcher one is, The Witcher's Project Sirius studio appears to have been hit with layoffs. Last week on May 11th, CD Projekt announced The Witcher's Project Sirius was effectively back on track, having been successfully rebooted from its original vision. A day later, on May 12th, staff at the Molasses Flood, the CG Projekt-owned studio heading up the project, took to social media to reveal they'd been laid off from the developer. A tweet from Kotaku reporter Ethan Gotch claims that 29 developers were affected. An unattributed quote states that because the project changed, so has the composition of the team that's working on it, mainly on the Molasses Flood's side.
So, both sad stories, right? Yeah. Talking about layoffs. I think the Deviation one is a bit more interesting just in terms of what Deviation was to PlayStation. Because if you remember, about 2 years ago at Summer Game Fest, they came out and they announced that they're working with PlayStation on a new AAA shooter, right? And that was one of the games I was going to fall in line with PlayStation's whole games as a service strategy. And we've seen PlayStation partner with quite a few of these independent bigger studios, between Haven, which they ended up acquiring, Firewalk, which they ended up acquiring, and now Deviation, who are laying off a large amount of their staff. It seems like PlayStation is in a content, like, portfolio review stage, because we just talked about how the Concrete Genie developer, Pixel Opus, they got shut down, and they were a PlayStation-owned studio. Media Molecule has ended development on Dreams. They talk about how now they're going to work on the next thing. Like, I think this is all part of PlayStation being like, hey, let's look at everything and reassess and make sure that everything is falling in line. Because even with the Pixel Opus story, the PlayStation's literal statement was, hey, yeah, we did a review on, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but our goals as a company and our, you know, company vision, and this, what they're doing doesn't align with what we are as PlayStation. And so that's why they're not here anymore. It seems like PlayStation is just in that stage, and there are so many question marks in terms of this Deviation thing. I wonder if it is whatever they're working on just isn't up to standard of what PlayStation is looking for, and therefore they might have pulled back on budget, scope, whatever. But it's unfortunate either way that people are losing their jobs, right? It's unfortunate that that layoffs are happening, and it makes me wonder, what is the future of this Deviation game? Do we ever even see this Deviation game? Is that partnership going to be null and void going forward? Like, is that going to be a thing? I'm at the place now where I don't have much faith in seeing this game. So yeah, that's that's my read on it. And then, yeah, the Witcher thing is unfortunate too, right? Project Sirius, I believe, was the multiplayer project. And so, like, you know, there's so many question marks there too in terms of how far out that is, how many different Witcher projects are being worked on, and then, yeah, like, what is the vision for this Witcher multiplayer thing? Is that now reducing in scope because, like, CD Projekt Red is like, no, we don't need it to be this thing, we need it to be this other thing. Who knows? But either way, yeah, unfortunate. And our hearts go out, of course, to the people that are losing their jobs out there.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is Kind of Funny Games Daily. So that means we get to talk about, like, the fun sales numbers. We get to talk about the sad layoffs. We get to talk about the Microsoft, Activision, Blizzard acquisition, latest rumblings. And then, of course, there has to be toxic workplace allegations.
Of course.
God damn it. Can we fucking be better, everybody? But there's some good news to this one. There's like a silver lining. The story number 8, the final story of the day. Open Roads team splits from Fulbright after toxic workplace allegations. This comes from Ryan Leston at IGN. The Open Roads team is no longer a part of Fulbright after splitting with the company. According to Fulbright co-founder Steve Gaynor, the team, now known as the Open Roads team, will continue to work with Annapurna Interactive, but is no longer connected to its former studio. Quote, after a great deal of consideration, it's just no longer Fulbright's place to represent Open Worlds publicly going forward. It'll be credited to the Open Roads team at launch. It's been almost 2 years since Gaynor stepped down as creative lead on Open Roads following accusations of creating a toxic work culture. His behavior reportedly led to 12 staff members exiting the studio, with women repeatedly broken down by microaggression, according to reports. My leadership style was hurtful to people that worked at Fulbright, and for that I truly apologize. While the Open Roads team continues to work on the title, it looks as though Gaynor will be continuing on with Fulbright. The studio's next title will be a solo endeavor. So yeah, you know, obviously, horrible story there in terms of the toxic workplace, but this seems to be a positive.
It's a positive. It's a step in the right direction, right? Because the toxic workplace stuff was reported in, I believe, 2021, in regards to the whole thing that went down with Fulbright and Steve Gaynor and how he was not a good leader, right? And he mistreated people and people left because of him. And so, yeah, to see Open Roads continue as a game, that's the thing that, at least, I think that is the silver lining. Because when I first read this headline, I was like, oh, Open Roads is not happening. They're going to cancel Open Roads. And to see them go, no, we're splitting off from Fulbright and becoming just the Open Roads team, and we're going to still work with Annapurna to get this game out. That's good news, right? And them working on this game separately from Steve Gaynor, I think that's good news. And then, yeah, Steve Gaynor seemingly having Fulbright be just a solo studio and having it be just him, that's probably best for all parties involved. Like, yeah, like, you should not, like, I know he's already stepped down as leader because that was the whole story before, but yeah, like, I couldn't imagine going through all that and then still being at a studio working with him at the same studio and being like, hey, I gotta collaborate with this guy who made this toxic work, this workplace toxic for the longest time. Like, yeah, no, split off, do your own thing, like, work in solitude and make your game or whatever. But yeah, I'm glad that the Open Roads folks are able to continue on with the game and hopefully make this something that they're proud of and happy to be a part of working.
Yeah. Plus, I hope that one day we don't need to talk about the majority of the things that we have to talk about on this show. But until then, if I want to know what's coming to Mom and Grab shops today, where would I look?
You would look toward the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday. Usually I try to, like, end with a more upbeat story so the transition is less difficult. It was tough because we had 3 in a row and I was like, ah, shit.
Well. Yep, it is what it is, man. There's those days. Out today, Cook Serve Forever, early access on PC, Trail of Ayash on PC, and Geikosu Benza Race Toilet Shooting Star.
You would be shocked to see the art for this game. Actually, you might not be shocked to see the art
Toilet
for this game.
Shooting Star.
When I was copying over the Out Today stuff, this one came with the image, like the promotional art for it. And Tim?
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, shit. Bear's Bar gameplay, and this is even better than I thought.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
God, this looks like what I remember arcades during the late 90s. Being like.
So for audio listeners, it looks to be a driving racing game, actually, but
Mario Kart-esque.
Yeah, instead of driving cars, they are driving toilets, and your character is sitting on the toilet reading a newspaper and driving around.
Wow, there's
and it looks like, yeah, it looks like a early arcade game with just madness on the screen. This UI is something else.
I don't think I've ever seen more UI ever.
Oh, you should boot up Final Fantasy 14.
Also, look at the map on the top right. why is there just a yellow circle not on the course?
Oh, yeah, what is that yellow? Because the line is probably where the lap thing is. What would the yellow circle be? Oh, man, question.
There's a lot going
if
on.
If you've played this toilet game, let us know
let what us the yellow know. Thing is. Some new dates for you. WrestleQuest has been delayed to summer 2023. Really excited for that one. The Super Mario Bros. Movie, available digitally Tuesday, May 16th in the United States for purchase. That is wild to me, but hey, it's happening.
Let's go.
Hawk and Reborn launches May 17th, early access on Steam. Final Fantasy 14, patch 6.4. The Dark Throne is coming May 23rd. Smurfs Kart launches on everything.
That's exactly what it sounds like.
Second, yep. Layers of Fear launches June 15th for Xbox Series X, PS5, and PC.
Not gonna lie.
Oh, I guess it's probably a new, just like a next-gen version or something?
Layers of Fear?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it must be.
No, isn't that
Is it
sequel?
Like a new one?
There was Layers of Fear. Fuck. It was Layers of Fear, then Layers of Fear 2, and now I think it is a reboot. But okay. I thought the reboot already came out.
Huh. Hmm.
I can double check.
And Vampire the Masquerade Blood Hunt ends development, but will keep service up indefinitely.
Never mind. This is the new game. Built on Unreal Engine 5.
Let's see. It's time for You're Wrong. You can go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong and let us know what we get wrong as we screw it up live. CWLUC says Bezos is no longer the CEO of Amazon. In January 2021, Jeff Bezos designated Andy Jassy his official successor as CEO, with the transition occurring on July 5th, 2021. It's been some time since Jassy's been in charge and making interesting decisions at Amazon. I'm gonna be honest with you, I didn't know that.
I don't think I knew that either, but also I don't know if we technically got that wrong because we just read from the story. But still, we did talk about Jeff Bezos.
I appreciate this, though, because now I learned something. I learned a lot today, Wes.
Yeah.
I learned this, and I learned the whole using the fan, using the
Ultra Hand recall. That'll get you through so many puzzles.
Oh, baby.
If you just want to stop thinking for a second, use that Ultra Hand, lift something up, use recall, get on that thing, get lifted up.
I can't wait to keep talking about this game for the rest of my life with you, Bless. That's been kind of Funny Games Daily. What an episode. It was some good.
What an episode.
It was some bad. There was a lot of great Zelda talk. And there was some memories made right here on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Of course, we're going to do our little fun post show. Snowbike Mike's about to join us. Really excited for that. I exited the dock. But Bless, do you want to let people know who's hosting the rest
of the week? I can let people know who's hosting the rest of the week. This week's hosts are on Tuesday, tomorrow. You're getting me and the one and only Snowbike Michael. It's me and you, bro. Me and you. On Wednesday, you got me and Greg. Thursday, you got me and Tim. Then on Friday, you got Greg and Tim. Of course, if you're watching this live, remember, we're trying something new with YouTube Super Chats right here in KFTD, only on YouTube in the live stream. There's going to be a 30-minute post show where Mike comes in. We talk to him about your Super Chat questions, so stay tuned for that. This has been Kind of Funny Games Daily.
It has.
Want to sign off?
I will. Until next time, I love you all. Goodbye.